BBC World Service. Welcome to World Briefing with Sandy Walsh. The headlines at 9 o'clock GMT. The United Nations says the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has agreed to attend a summit meeting on Monday aimed at stopping the violence in the Middle East. Clashes between French police and Basque separatists have overshadowed a summit of European Union leaders in the French town of Biarritz. And the state funeral is taking place in Sri Lanka of the world's first woman prime minister, Sirimavo Bandaranaike. In today's other news, the wartime leader of Bosnia-Herzegovina, Alija Izetbegović, retires from the country's three-member presidency. This is the BBC in London. But before all that, we have a roundup of world news.
BBC News with Rachel Weston. The United Nations says the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has agreed to go to a Middle East summit meeting on Monday. A UN spokesman said Mr. Arafat had told the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who's in Jerusalem, of his decision. The spokesman said the summit was to be held on Monday in the Egyptian town of Sharm el-Sheikh. Israel, the United States and Egypt would also be there. Clive Myrie has just filed this report.
Yasser Arafat has been under enormous pressure to agree to talks, but also under enormous pressure from the Palestinian people not to commit himself until certain conditions were met. Of the scores and scores of deaths resulting from the recent violence in the West Bank and Gaza, it's the Palestinians who've lost the most lives. Consequently, Yasser Arafat has been holding out for an Israeli withdrawal of troops from near Palestinian-controlled areas and an investigation into how all the violence started in the first place. But he now seems to have agreed to meet with the Israelis in Egypt despite these conditions not being met. It's unlikely the Palestinian leader has dropped his demands altogether. Rather, the UN Secretary-General Kofi Annan has probably convinced him that his demands will be addressed in Egypt.
A state funeral is being held in Sri Lanka for the country's and the world's first woman prime minister, Sirimavo Bandaranaike. She died on Tuesday, aged 84. Mrs. Bandaranaike's daughter, the current president, Chandrika Kumaratunga, will lead the funeral procession at the family home outside the capital, Colombo. Security is tight, and police said mourners would have to undergo body searches for explosives. Tamil Tiger suicide bombers have frequently tried to attack state occasions in Sri Lanka. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The European Union summit in Biarritz in the French Basque region has been marred by violent clashes overnight in the nearby town of Bayonne between police and hundreds of Basque separatists. William Horsley reports.
Overnight, there were violent scenes in Bayonne as hundreds of young Basque demonstrators taking part in what they call a counter-summit threw petrol bombs and stones at police, attacked a police station, and smashed vehicles and telephone booths. The protesters want hundreds of Basque activists involved in an armed struggle for the region's independence, who are now in jails in different parts of Spain and France, to be brought back close to their homes. The highlight of this second and last day of the summit will be a visit here by the newly installed president of Yugoslavia, Vojislav Kostunica. The EU's High Representative for Foreign Policy, Javier Solana, indicated European leaders would not at this stage press Mr. Kostunica to hand over Mr. Milosevic and other indicted war crimes suspects for trial in the UN-sponsored tribunal in The Hague. Mr. Solana said Serbia's new democracy was still fragile and the EU must show patience.
At the talks proper, the EU leaders are due to examine a proposed European Charter on Fundamental Rights and what legal status it should have within the organisation. The EU leaders have been working on reforms to prepare the group to take in new member countries. In Serbia itself, talks on the dissolution of the Serbian parliament and the calling of early parliamentary elections are expected to resume later today. Last night, discussions failed to reach an agreement. A spokesman for supporters of the new Yugoslav president, Vojislav Koštunica, said the tentative election date of December the 24th had been agreed, although further talks were needed with the socialists led by the ousted president Slobodan Milosevic. Nick Thorpe has the details.
Yugoslavia has two parallel systems of government, one Yugoslav and one Serbian. President Koštunica and his allies now dominate at the Yugoslav level, while former President Milosevic and his supporters still hold the Serbian government. The negotiations are expected to resume later today. The toughest point concerns the exact makeup of a transitional government, which would rule the country until new Serbian elections are held, probably on December the 24th. This is expected to include only four ministries: Interior, Justice, Finance and Information. All will be crucial in the run-up to the elections, at which the former opposition will hope to repeat the landslide victory they won in the Yugoslav vote last month, while the socialists hope to claw back some of their support.
The president of South Korea, Kim Dae-jung, has said he will go to Oslo to receive the Nobel Peace Prize in a ceremony due to take place in December this year. Earlier, Mr. Kim received tributes from world leaders for having been awarded the prize for his efforts to bring reconciliation to the Korean Peninsula after more than 50 years of hostility. President Clinton said the award was a fitting tribute to Kim Dae-jung's personal courage and his stand for human rights. Kofi Annan said it was the best testament to the prospect of a bright future in the Korean Peninsula. BBC News.
It's 6 minutes past nine, GMT. You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Sandy Walsh. Well, while efforts continue to organise a summit between the Israeli and Palestinian leaders, the violence in the Palestinian territories seems to have been quelled, at least for now, by yesterday's massive security operation by the Israeli army. But as our correspondent Andrew Hoskin reports from Jerusalem, people are afraid the calm won't last.
Jerusalem is famously a noisy place, but there seems to be an unsettling quiet here in the streets of the city, and it's not just down to the Sabbath or the start of the Sukkot public holiday to mark the Jews' biblical flight from Egypt. There's fear that Palestinians may resort to a weapon they've used before in the face of overwhelming military power: terrorism. The West Bank town of Ramila, just a few miles from Jerusalem, was again the scene of violence yesterday, but the scare was much less than feared due to extensive Israeli security precautions. Many Jews are now worried that Palestinian extremists may take their holy war into the heart of Israel.
I think that most of the people here in Israel, when you sit in the you hear everyone talks about it, we are really scared.
About half of the Israeli Jewish population of the Israelis feel embarrassed and confused with the peace process, because we protected it and we voted for it for a couple of elections and for long years, about a decade. And now many of the Israelis think that maybe there is no partner, or maybe that the conflict would last for another 10 or 20 or 30 years.
The Israeli army claims that Yasser Arafat has released hundreds of suspected Palestinian terrorists. Lieutenant Colonel Yona Gazi is an army spokesman.
What we will want to make sure is that these people who may send some of their youngsters as living bombs, as they have done before to the heart of Tel Aviv and the heart of Jerusalem, we would like to make sure that these people do not have that chance to come into our cities.
Despite the tough talk by the army, many of Israel's politicians are desperate to avoid war. Government spokesman Avi Pazner.
You gain nothing from war. The only way you can gain is by agreement. But sometimes, regretfully, you are led into a situation where you have no option. I hope that we'll not be led into such a situation, and we will do whatever is possible to avoid a war.
Avi Pazner ending that report from Andrew Hoskin in Jerusalem. The wartime leader of Bosnia-Herzegovina, Alija Izetbegović, retires today from the country's three-member presidency. Mr. Izetbegović, who is 75, is standing down 2 years early because of poor health. Last month, he was hospitalised in New York with pneumonia while attending a United Nations summit. His retirement marks the passing of a generation of wartime leaders in the former Yugoslavia, as Alex Kroger reports from Sarajevo.
Alija Izetbegović has led his party and Bosnia's Muslims for the past 10 years. A Muslim intellectual and activist, Mr. Izetbegović served 2 terms in prison for his writings. He founded his party, the Muslim Nationalist SDA, in 1990, taking the largest number of seats in Bosnia's first multi-party elections. In April 1992, Bosnia was recognized as an independent state by the European Community. Within weeks, the fighting had begun. Having failed to anticipate the willingness of the Bosnian Serbs to go to war, with the full backing of Slobodan Milosevic's government in Belgrade, Mr. Izetbegović went on to lead the Bosnian government throughout the 3.5-year conflict. In 1995, he signed the Dayton Peace Accord, which divided Bosnia into two entities, the Muslim Croat Federation and the Republika Srpska. After the war, as leader of the largest Muslim party, Mr. Izetbegovic held the Muslim seat on Bosnia's tripartite presidency. In recent years, the SDA has been dogged by allegations of corruption, losing votes in last April's local elections. In May, Mr. Izetbegovic announced his intention to retire, citing his age, his health, and what he called unjustified pressure from the international community, which in practice runs much of post-war Bosnia. Mr. Izetbegovic will lead his party into the November parliamentary elections, but his retirement from the presidency marks the end of an era and the passing of a generation of leaders who oversaw the dismemberment of the former Yugoslavia.
Alex Kroger in Sarajevo. Austrian environmentalists protesting against a nuclear power station in the neighbouring Czech Republic have continued to blockade the border between the two countries. However, there are now only a couple of hundred protesters, down from several thousand on Friday. Ray Furlong reports from the border post of Vulovic.
There was a sleepy atmosphere at Vulovic as demonstrators began another day blockading the border. Piped music was playing and the last litter from a rock concert held the night before was being cleared up. There are now only a couple of hundred protesters, down from the 5,000 who came here on Friday for the biggest protests so far against the Temelín nuclear plant 60 kilometres to the north. The organisers say the blockade will continue for the weekend, although some people here are ready to stay longer. Austria has often clashed with its neighbours over their nuclear programmes. On Friday, the far-right leader Jörg Haider said both the Czech Republic and Slovenia could forget joining the European Union while they had dangerous nuclear plants. The Czech government says Temelín is safe and is refusing talks with Austria until the border blockade is lifted. Both sides are seeking support from the European Union as relations between Prague and Vienna hit new lows.
Ray Furlong. President Joseph Estrada of the Philippines, who is embroiled in an illegal gambling scandal that has led to calls for his removal from office, has announced that all legal forms of gambling controlled by the government are to be privatized. He also repeated his denial that he received millions of dollars from illegal gambling. John McLean reports from Manila.
In a nationwide broadcast, President Estrada said that the government-controlled company that runs certain legal forms of gambling, such as casinos, online gaming and lotteries, would be sold to the private sector. Mr. Estrada said this was the first of a series of reforms meant to calm the political crisis that's engulfed the country. But privatizing legal gambling does not appear to address the central issue, which is illegal gambling, and whether or not Mr. Estrada is involved in it. A local government official has alleged that the president has received more than $8.5 million in profits from illegal numbers games. Mr. Estrada reiterated in his broadcast that his conscience is clear and that he's ready to face his accusers. The evidence against him presented so far is flimsy. Even so, several leading figures have called for the president's resignation, and opposition congressmen are preparing an impeachment case. The defense minister and chief of staff have appeared on television to deny that there are plans to declare a state of emergency or martial law. They also sought to dispel rumors that a coup d'etat is in the offing.
John McLean reporting. The space shuttle Discovery has docked with the International Space Station at the beginning of a week of construction, which will include four spacewalks. No doubt the crews on board will find a new report very interesting. In the first ever mental health survey of space crews, researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, have found that Russian cosmonauts are happier than American astronauts. They say in the crew sent to the Mir space station, the American crew member was far more likely to feel both frustrated and lonely than either of the two Russians in the group. That's what one of our science staff reports.
Professor of Psychiatry Nick Canas has found that the American participants were less satisfied with their group interaction and work environment on Mir than their Russian co-workers. He thinks that this could be due to differences in language and culture. The crew studied consisted of two Russian cosmonauts and one American astronaut. Groups of three people in whatever circumstances can face difficulties, as it often ends up with two people ganging up against one. And this is made worse when two of the groups share the same cultural background. leaving the American feeling like the odd one out. As the first crew prepares to take up residence in the new International Space Station at the end of this month, the obvious solution to this problem would be to have crews of four. But this isn't possible, as the station's Soyuz escape pod can only hold three people. Professor Canas suggests that the pioneering crew are briefed about the possible difficulties they might encounter before they leave Earth, that the leadership role in the group is rotated regularly to prevent friction, and that at least one member of the group has some training in counselling. This psychological preparation will become much more necessary for longer trips into space, such as a trip to Mars.
Toby Murcott. It's just after 9:15 Greenwich Mean Time. A reminder of our main story. The United Nations says the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has agreed to attend a summit meeting on Monday aimed at stopping the violence in the Middle East. I'm Sandy Walsh. You're listening to the BBC in London.